listeners, this is Simon Ward from thetriathloncoach.com bringing you our weekly SWATcast. And today I'm joined by a very special guest who I will introduce in a minute. But before then, I just wanted to let you know that one of my key driving forces now is about sharing all the information and knowledge that I've gained over the years as an athlete, as a coach, and from all the amazing people that have shared knowledge with me. And what I've done to start with is put down 50 of my top tips, some very simple things that you can use every day in your training to help you become a better triathlete and also to have a better triathlon lifestyle. Now, if you'd like to get hold of one of those copies, all you need to do is write to beth@thetriathloncoach.com. Headlining your email with "please send me Simon's top 12 tips" and she will send that out to you. And then once you've got those and digested them, we'd be happy to share the remaining 38. So that's got the introductions out of the way as far as the information's concerned. Now, today's guest. So earlier on this year, you may remember that I got into a bit of an online spat with somebody who took great issue over the amazing fitness test that this guy did. He hit 420 watts for 20 minutes in a 20-minute time trial on his indoor trainer. And people from all over the world were writing to me saying, this guy should be riding for Team Sky. But he doesn't. He's an entrepreneur. He's a businessman. He's a philanthropist. He's a writer. He's a husband and a father. And he's an all-round great guy. His name's Toby Baxendale. I'm really pleased that you've been able to join us, Toby. So thank you very much for that. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you, Simon, for having me on your show. I must be pedantic, Simon, and point out it's actually 421 watts, you remember. I sent you the photo of it.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Toby. And excuse me for rounding it down there. So 421 watts, and we'll come on to that in due course, because it did create a fair amount of angst amongst some people and a great deal of debate about that whole process. And I think perhaps when we do get around to discuss it, we'll see that there were some important things that people ignored because they just looked at the headline. Yes. But before then, Toby, look, you and I go back a long way. Probably, did we think it was about 12 to 15 years?
Yeah, I think I did my first triathlon actually in 2004, anyway. No later than that. So it would have been the cycling show and I came and tried to buy a compu trainer off you. Remember?
I do. I remember being stuck in this room in the Islington Art and Design Centre at the cycle show. Nobody was coming in because we were off to the side and it was difficult to find. And then just as I was working out how to escape from there and begin the long journey home, in you popped with a pocket full of cash. And I thought you had a credit card and I couldn't take that. So we had to run the credit card through somebody else's system. And it took a while for me to get the money. In the meantime, you got going on your compu trainer.
That's it. And that was the start. That was the start of my triathlon career. Yes.
Yeah. So
years ago,
you contacted me shortly afterwards with some questions, and then asked me if I'd be interested in coaching. So here we are. And again, one of the points that perhaps we'll come up with later is about happy customers and happy clients, something that every business is looking for, isn't it? You know, retention of customers rather than constant turnover. So let's talk about your training, Toby. What's the driving force for you with your daily routine? Is it to keep fit? Is it to look amazing when you go out to dinner with your wife? Or is it to enter races and set new personal bests?
How I describe it, if a chap in the street asks, is I would say it's actually part of my lifestyle. So it's something I enjoy. I enjoy doing the training in the morning. I usually do it immediately as I get up. So it becomes almost like a routine, brushing your teeth type thing. And I enjoy it because it sets me up for the rest of the day entirely. And I enjoy the rest day, which I take religiously, once a week. So I'm in a routine and it just works for my lifestyle. And, if you are sitting at a desk for a large part of the day, which I, sometimes do, it's nice to know that you've done, a really good workout beforehand. So it's a lifestyle thing. The benefits of that lifestyle are just being really, really on top of your game and fit. And, my mind works. My mind would just work so much better being physically on top of my game. In fact, I'm absolutely sure that if I went back to my sort of 30-year-old self before I started running, I just wouldn't be able to keep up and have the energy and have to do the pace that I do with life. And I just wouldn't achieve as much. So it's completely integral and interwoven into the fabric of my life.
So, I mean, if we go back to when we first met, because your life and your lifestyle has changed a bit since then, you were running and growing a fish distribution business. And you had a young family then, but I was constantly amazed by your work ethic there. You were getting up, what, 4:30, 5 o'clock sometimes to get in 2 hours of training before you sat down to breakfast with your children and got on with your day of work. And then you were finishing up work quite late at night.
Yeah, and well, and sometimes working over and through the night because, a lot of those hours are the fish hours, antisocial hours, you know, in terms of if you're working on the markets and the auctions as well. So it's a bit of a, quite frankly, you know, I possibly wouldn't do my life that way again if I had the chance. But, you know, I could sustain it because I was on top of my game. I was super fit. Just would not have been able to do it otherwise and keep all those, you know, various balls running. But I wouldn't necessarily advocate it as a lifestyle choice at the time, but that's just how it was.
But the interesting thing for me then was the discipline you applied. You got up and you did that training. You rang me at the right time every week. And so despite those challenges that a lot of people would find insurmountable in some ways, you almost welcomed them, didn't you, as another challenge to be dealt with and overcome.
Simon, quite frankly, if that's my life, you know, what do I actually value? Do I value watching Enders, for example, and whatever other soap was on at the time, or do I value the fact that art is in tip-top condition, my brain is in tip-top condition, I'm having a fantastic, you know, business career, entrepreneurial career, and I'm having a wonderful family life, and I can ditch all the stuff that's just clutter, you know. And quite frankly, a load of that stuff that we just do is clutter. Just, you know, bin 2 hours of television a day, and invest in your personal health, and see what benefits you get. Now I can give you loads of examples of that, but that's probably a really serious game changer when I realised actually, you know, this stuff doesn't actually do anything for me, but the adjusting on the physical side does. So there we are. Got cleared that rubbish out of my life. And by the way, I don't mean to denigrate the program itself, but it's just, you know, you don't need it.
Of course, living in Leeds, we wouldn't be watching EastEnders, Toby. It would be Emmerdale Farm, of course, because it's a proper northern family.
Exactly. There's a lot of junk you can cut out of your life anyway. And, you know, that's how I can maintain, you know, building up what I did, building up the you know, seafood holdings and building up, you know, that enterprise, plus maintaining a family, which I hope I've honoured and had proper interaction with, you know, all the way through as much as I can. As a father, I know many people who would have been in a regular corporate in environment and life worked less hours than me, but still had less interaction with their children because they're doing lots of fluff.
Well, and probably not managing to get the same amount of exercise in then. So this really is an interesting study, even if it's an N equals one study, of how to order the priorities in your life. And perhaps that's all it takes. Is, you know, there's many books that I have in my office here, and I'm sure you've read them as well, you know, The One Thing and Clarity and Essentialism, but which all point to the same thing about identifying your priorities, focusing purely on those and cutting out the fluff if you want to get to where you want to be. And when I hear people complaining that life's dealt them the wrong set of cards and it's not fair, and if only we tax the rich people more, life would be better for everybody further down the ladder, you know, for some of those people, I think that if they just got a handle of their priorities and worked out what was important and focused on those, life would suddenly be a lot rosier.
Exactly. So that's what it forced me to do. Well, either doing training for Ironman or, you know, even 70.3 Ironman, and possibly even for Olympic distance, if you're going to do it properly, and you've got a full-time job and you've got a family, one of those things will suffer unless you cut out the fluff.
Yeah.
And if you cut out the fluff, then you could do all of those and you will do them all better. That's the most important thing. And you will have a better quality of life as a result of it. So the mooching around, you know, with your after work, you know, is that necessary? You know, it might be nice talking to your mates and so on and so forth, but are you really going to get anything out of it? How much of it is really necessary? Yes, you need your mates, and yes, you do need your social interaction, but do you really need as much of it as you're doing? Like, you know, is your life padded out just that little bit too much? You can trim it down a little bit more. And that's what I would encourage you know, anyone to do is, well, as you say, Simon, just focus on those, on what really, really matters. What's going to move the dial in your life? What's really going to make the difference? And you'll find actually a load of it doesn't. So you can cut it.
I remember having a conversation with yourself, Toby, and several other entrepreneurs that I was working with back in 2008 when that big recession hit us. And the part of the interview I asked them was, why did they keep training? And the mental acuity thing was a real big factor for them. You know, the ability, particularly in the recession where they had, you know, everything was more competitive and they needed to be thinking faster on their feet. Having that sharpness of thinking gave them the edge. But the other thing was that it was an integral part of their lifestyle and their habits. And I asked several people, well, how do you make sure that you get it done? And I think one of yours was that if you came home from work, you had to go straight into the gym. You had to get straight into the into your garage and get on the bike or get onto the weights. Because if you sat down for a moment and did just what you said there, had 5 minutes chit-chatting with your wife, or, you know, picking up the paper, or just aimlessly doing something, you were dead, and that was it. The time was gone.
Yeah, that's it. As soon as you hit your favorite chair,
yeah.
And you're in the comfort of the warmth and the comfort and the love and the this, that, and the other. That's it. You're done. You're done. You're done for the night. So it was, literally get back. Don't even go in. My gym, as you know, is separate to my house. So I can literally just go into my gym, do what I need, do what I wanted to do then. And then go into the house and then appreciate the love, the warmth, the affection, everything like that, even more, and relax.
Lovely. Okay. Yeah? So we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left on this part of the conversation, Toby, which we really, I suppose, will be preparatory to the 420-watt thing. So let's just focus in on training, and we'll save the 420-watt bit for part two. Over the years, your training has changed. That's been a sort of a two-way partnership between me and you. You've always been keen to experiment. You were a runner mostly, weren't you? And then quite a strong cyclist, as I remember. But you never really liked swimming. But that's something that's come laterally to you. And maybe explain. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, strictly speaking, I was absolutely non-athlete right up until the age of 30, and then at 15 stone, I decided, and you know, doing the running for the bus and finding it very difficult, thought, right, I've got to do something about this. And that's when I started running. And then after 4 years or so, that's when I thought, well, you know, it's kind of a bit boring just doing running, and got into the cycling. And the swimming was a complete and utter, you know, afterthought. And then someone did suggest triathlon, and that's about the time I started getting in contact with you. Yeah, and like most people who come from a non-swimming background and who have done running and a good cyclist, you tend to be a sinker in the pool. Bit useless in the pool. I mean, yes, I did learn at primary school how to swim, but then trying to swim with you guys, you know, who are good swimmers in the triathlons, absolutely hopeless. Yeah, so didn't like it. Had a phobia for it, really, I suppose, but I still do it, but, you know, not with any great pleasure.
Okay, so you've done what, three Ironman races now, is it?
Yeah, and probably about 10 of the 70.3s. Much more comfortable doing those.
Okay, but swimming's obviously an integral part of that. But I know some of the feedback you've given me recently is that you're really enjoying the swimming now. So where did the change occur?
The change was Primal Endurance. When you recommended me the Primal Endurance book to read that and to actually really adjust my lifestyle another notch then by taking out a lot of this carbohydrate that we have in our diet, and definitely taking out the carbohydrate that we use historically, or me now historically, in race formats and in training formats, and relying more on my natural body, you know, relying more on the fat system as an energy source, And actually training in that very limited, short bursts of very, very high intensity and a lot in very steady state formats. And that's just completely changed me and moved me on to a different level, a different plateau of training, which I'm very, very relaxed in. My performance is 49 years old now, and they're still the same times that I'm getting when I was, you know, just started my triathlon career in my mid-30s. So I'm delighted in that respect. But also in the pool, I'm now enjoying it. In the sea, I'm enjoying it. Open water, and I'm much more buoyant in the water as well, much more relaxed in the water, and I'm doing much better. So that's a turnaround since the diet change. And as you know, in 170.3 this year, I went in a state of ketosis all the way through. Just I completely on fat and water with two halves of orange, and that was it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a dissimilar time to that which I did on the same race in 2012, and ages against me.
Delighted. Yeah, we're both over that pinnacle now, Toby, and rolling down the other side, gathering speed towards the bottom of the age thing. But putting that aside, neither of us actually act or think like we're in our late 40s and early 50s, do we? So that was interesting then. So you read the Primal Endurance book, the Mark Sisson and Brad Kearns book, of which I have no commercial interest. But which I'm happy to recommend to lots of people, and you talked about lifestyle change there, so that was interesting because I know that the lifestyle change has then had an impact on your training, and you've already mentioned that lifestyle was uppermost in your mind. So having had 10 to 12 years of improving your lifestyle, there was this sudden catalyst to further improve it. I'm only interested in that because for most triathletes, it's usually the other way around: is they change the training first. But you altered your lifestyle and your approach.
Well, the whole approach to it and the whole diet changed. You know, upon reading that book, I was convinced by the reasoning and the science. Then I changed, as you know, it took 3 weeks of probably a bit feeling awkward and adjusting. But I could see the immediate benefits and. Just the ability not to have to make up shakes, not to have to have recovery drinks, and not to have to sort of, you know, fill myself up with gels and all this stuff that used to make me feel sick, you know, and then get better performance. It's a no-brainer for me to continue it through the life and adjust all my meals.
On the basis of reading the book and some of the conversations we had at that time, we adjusted your training to follow a more polarized approach, which is a lot of, you just alluded to it recently, a few sentences ago, a lot of lower intensity work below around 80% of functional threshold or heart rate. And 2 to 3 sessions per week of really high intensity work, super high intensity stuff. But you, and we're going to talk about how that started to affect your fitness. But you mentioned to me that there were a number of benefits you started to see and feel with your health and just your general well-being, which you think also had an impact on your fitness. Yeah.
Since changing of that diet, a material uplift in my energy levels. They were already high before by, you know, most regular people's standards. But now they're just significantly higher, tons and tons more energy. And just on the diet system, just not a heavy gut, not heavy, you know, how shall I say it politely, not heavy at the other end. Just being lighter, just being, just more fizzy in my life, you know, so more energy. I'm eternally grateful, quite frankly, for changing, reading that and changing.
Sleeping better?
Yes. Yeah. I sleep better, sleep or deeper, for sure. I don't have problems of being up in the night or being disturbed or anything like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you notice that there was better recovery between sessions?
Well, you've got to be a little bit careful here because, remember on the low intensity stuff, remember I was saying to you, you know, I don't feel, you know, you don't feel whacked. That's the whole point of it. Yeah. So the recovery is automatically quicker. But in those more extreme polarized sessions, yes, the recovery is quicker, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So better recovery, but more energy, sharper? I mean, you said you were sharp already, but did you feel like your brain was a bit sharper? Or did you not notice any change there?
No, I did. No, just all round, Simon, on all measures. I've just got more life, you know, as a result of that. I mean, I thought I was doing well before, and it was definitely better than I was doing in my 20s and my early 30s. But this is just taking me to, you know, it's just adjusting all of that. It's taking me to a different level. But, you know, I, of course, never knew that was possible. So it's great, you know, lovely.
And so let's I know you've get moving onto your next appointment now, Toby. So let's just summarise on this bit. And then in the next call, we can come back and talk about the training itself and sort of this 420-minute test that you did. So, but just to summarise, I mean, you were already a very successful, you know, you'd sold your business by the time we embarked on this polarised training thing. So you achieved that 20-year goal that you'd always mentioned to me. You'd changed your business life, so you were probably getting a little bit more sleep and not having to work all the hours God sends. Your children have grown up now a little bit, and you and your wife have moved on to a different phase of your life as the children are getting older. So that changed, but you were already very successful. You proved you've already got lots of energy. You were already a highly driven individual, yet you made this lifestyle change at a point in your life when most people feel like they're slowing down in their energy, slowing down in their activities, and you've upped your game and been able to move it on to the next level because you've changed your approach to nutrition and you've changed your approach to training, which is quite courageous because it requires an element of going backwards for a little bit. And it's all moved on to another level, so it was experimental, but without any downsides as far as you're concerned.
No downsides. And in fact, I think the bit that you just mentioned there, you have to go backwards to go forwards. Yes and no. You have to definitely go backwards in your mind, because everything is conditioned to train a little bit harder, train a little bit faster, push here, push there, push there. No, that's what I would say. Big no, you know. Take your time, step back, read this stuff and digest it, and don't be afraid of working at 60% capacity or something like that. You know, don't be afraid to do those long, slow sessions, because when it comes out to you doing those high performance sessions, and that's exactly what we found, and that's what I know you want to talk to me about in the next thing, then, you know, my performance went through the roof on those explosive sections.
Yeah.
Which would never ever be the case before. Absolutely not. So you can by adjusting, you know, even at this age, you know, I'm in my 49th year, even at this age, you can get benefits. You can defy time a little bit. There are, you know, without doing anything you know, extreme to your body. In fact, being far kinder to your body than you were historically. Under the old style training regime.
And maybe that's the secret, Toby, being a little bit kinder to your body. It sort of ties in with an interview I did with a lady in Boulder who spends a lot of time coaching elite masters athletes, you know, 10 years older than you and I, and finding that they've got this pool of endurance that doesn't need to be revisited every single day, but what they do need to do is do more high intensity work to retain that that muscle power and top end. They need longer recovery, so perhaps they need less volume of training. So similar to what you're just mentioning there, but also this willingness to back off and let your body have a bit of breathing space is something that I find a lot of endurance athletes aren't willing to do. You know, and there's a limit. You can't keep going harder and longer, otherwise you run out of time.
Yeah,
run out of time to enjoy the other things in your life, like your family and your children.
Yeah. Anyway, Simon, let's redo this conversation, renew it, and discuss the 421. You did me again for 1 watt. Yeah, I've got to remind you of that.
Keep doing that. Okay, listeners, thanks for joining us. We will be back with part two when we talk about the 421-watt test in the next issue. Bye for now, everybody. Thanks from me, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.